Hey, 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 peace. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Civil Alert. Actually, the hereafter with Civil Alert. I want to thank everybody for allowing me to come back into your house, your computers, wherever you at globally. I'm going to make this short real quick and turn it over to Wise Intelligence. For those that's not familiar, Wise does this show every two weeks here on this program at this station. And don't forget, next week, I believe we're going to move our time. I believe it's going to be from 2 to 4. That's going to be 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday. So I just want to turn the mic over to Wise Intelligence. Wise.
In the words of the great philosopher Ice Cube, yay, yay. let's get it started. You know what I mean? You're now listening to the Hereafter Radio Show. We're about to get straight into this. Without further ado, can you say your name?
Narubi Selah.
Narubi Selah is in the building, and we're about to get into this discussion: hip-hop and education. Hip-hop and education. Is hip-hop a problem for children? When they listen to hip-hop, does it disrupt or interfere with their ability to achieve academically? You know, is hip-hop a problem, or can hip-hop's influence be leveraged to motivate youth towards positive attitudes, lifestyles, and higher education? All right, so without further ado, we got a dynamic, magnanimous brother in the building today. Yeah! You know what I mean? Brother Baye Kemet. His brother right here is an activist, hip-hop DJ, just ill, you know what I mean? And you know what I mean? Artist, activist, and founder of the Garvey School in Trenton, New Jersey.
No doubt.
One of the most necessary institutions in this state, coast, and country.
No doubt.
So, Baye, introduce yourself. Yeah, I mean,
I appreciate him. Add on.
Yeah, add on.
I'm Baye Kemet. I'm the principal and founder of the Garvey School. Egun Omode Shule. Egun Omode means the children of the ancestors. Shule is, of course, school. I'm here with my son, Azikiwe Kafele Kemet, strong Azikiwe. Warrior, six-year-old drummer, little basketball player, football player, intellectual, right? Ashe.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So,
well, let's get into it. I mean, my thing is, why do we always have to blame hip-hop for everything? Hip-hop didn't start No Child Left Behind. Hip-hop didn't put lead into our schools. Hip-hop didn't write the whack curriculum that's in every ghetto going across the United States and America. So why do we have to point the finger at hip-hop when it comes to violence and raising the bar, for that matter? Like, why, you know?
It's a very good point.
You know,
is it just me, or I mean?
Well, I mean, you being a hip hopper, you would definitely take that position. But you know, a lot of people, they say that hip hop and the messages, the derogatory messages that come across in the culture, kind of misleads the youth. You know, it misleads them because it presents an idea of grandeur without even having an education. You know, they see, you know, you look at a lot of MCs, a lot of rappers, most of them are high school dropouts. Well, a large percentage of them are high school dropouts, and it seems as if they're glorifying the idea that they didn't go to school, they did it on the streets. They got their hustle on, put their grind down, got paid, and now they doing what they do. So a lot of kids are saying, you know, I don't have to go through school. There's a shortcut. I could take a shortcut. I could actually be a rapper. Mm. I could leave this alone and I could sharpen my rap skills, or I could leave this alone, go to the corner and sharpen my pitch game. So that's probably why a lot of heads are saying that hip hop.
But the institution, I don't know, Baye, as a leader in the educational world, and again, I'm not saying a few kids, you know, a couple of kids that may be influenced by a hip hop song or two. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the entire institution of education.
No, don't doubt. Yeah, I mean, and as an educator, you're making a very good point. I mean, you're talking about the history of American education. I mean, the public schools were not founded to teach black children. And so if you go into the public schools or what have you, children are not learning about who they are. Hip hop can be a tunnel. It could be a way to teach our children. You know, our children are African children. They're rhythmic, so they can learn from music, and you know, they can learn from writing a rap. You know what I'm saying?
So when you say that the public school system wasn't designed to teach our children, mm-hmm. are you saying, in effect, that Caucasian children or white children are pretty much the default student.
Oh, no doubt.
And the entire program is modeled.
No doubt. And you can go even further. The white male is actually who the schools were developed for. You have to realize that in the 16th, 1700s, white women weren't going to school.
It wasn't
you know, sending white women to school. So it was the white male that they actually, you know, designed the public school for. Right. They threw our children. In fact, a lot of our people fought to get into the public school. They said, okay, well, if we have to open the doors, Little Rock Nine, you know, Ole Miss, you know, and what have you. We have to open the door, come in, but we're not going to change how we're teaching. Not for you.
So, wow, that brings me to a question. This is a good question. So do you think integration hurt the education of black youth more than it has helped? Or has integration increased our chances of achieving a higher education? And it's simply, as Bill Cosby stated, black people are not taking advantage of the 1954 Brown versus the Board of Education ruling. You know, using Barack Obama as an example, does he represent an illustration of how integration has worked and benefited us as a people?
No, integration has not helped our people. In fact, if you look at the turn of the 20th century, 1900s, that black people were actually better off in the early 1900s than they are today. We had our own black banks, we had our own black insurance company, we had our own black, you know, black communities with black doctors, black lawyers, black carpenters,
so
black,
like Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street.
I was going to throw that in there just to play the devil's advocate, though, with the knowledge that we have of, let's say, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Right.
When we had all of this black banks and black churches and black hospitals, what did they do? Right. They dropped bombs on us. So just to play the devil's advocate here, as someone with that knowledge, would that not deter me from wanting to do my own thing? Would that not want to integrate me even more, if you will, because of that fear factor?
Well, you know, also, you have to look at it, too, that the black, when black people were trying to integrate, we dropped all of the ideals of nation building and wanted to fully integrate into white America. So what happened is we forgot that we had to food, clothe, and shelter ourselves. But we also forgot that we got to educate ourselves, we got to medicate ourselves, but then we got to have a defense.
Right.
How you gonna have a nation you ain't defending yourself? So Wall Street didn't have no defense. Okay? Black capitalists today don't have a defense. So when the system falls, black capitalism falls. No, we have to have our own defense.
Right, but during Reconstruction, you know, if we go back to Reconstruction, like 5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, we're dealing with an era wherein black people started to achieve, and we had a lot of the so-called rights that we have today. You know, there were black congressmen, black men in the House, so on and so forth, black mayors, and so on and so forth. At this such an early date after slavery, you know, black people had the right to vote in 1870. Right. You know, so I guess the question then becomes, you know, what happened to put black people on a 100-year struggle to regain the things that they once had? You know, because you say about not having an army and things of that nature, but black people had militias. They had their own militias to protect their land and property and things of that nature. But what happened was, with the overthrow of Reconstruction, we had the Ku Klux Klan formed. And the Ku Klux Klan launched the epic of domestic terrorism against black people who had started to build their own communities and things of that nature. And the federal government came in and passed the edict to unarm the black militias.
Most certainly.
So they took all the guns from the black militias and then unleashed the Ku Klux Klan on them. You know, the first gun law in America was that black people couldn't have one. So,
but, you know, I want to add to that, that, you know, you have to look at that in Black Reconstruction, that, you know, black people were, as the way, as they still are today, are confused about what actual power is. You look at Black Reconstruction, and I remember reading in Up From Slavery, Booker T. Washington's book, where he was talking about how after Reconstruction, that there were people who were carpenters. I remember he said he walked by a person, a guy was laying bricks, and the guy said, "Excuse me, Lieutenant Governor, can you hand me such and such?" Because what happened was they put black people into these positions of power, but they weren't powerful. So when Black Reconstruction fell, they went back to being plumbers, but they had the title of Lieutenant Governor. So you get a
Lieutenant
guy
plumber.
Lieutenant plumber, you see what I'm saying? So you get a guy like, let's say Mayor Palmer, who becomes the president, who becomes the mayor of Trenton. But because we have a black face, we think that we are not powerful.
But I like how your subconscious kind of integrated the mayor with the president.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Same concept.
It's same
concept.
Same concept. Right.
Oh, so okay, that kind of shines a little more light on the Barack Obama thing that I brought up. So Barack Obama represents more of a symbol of change certainly. Than actually change. So it's not really a change we can believe in, but rather a change. Well, the illusion of change that we've always believed.
But I think he's that symbol, not even because he's a black man, but just because that office within itself is a symbol.
Oh, most certainly.
Right. So, you know? so what you're saying is that if the white man in the Santa Claus suit at the mall takes his break, and the next Santa Claus has a black face, he just have on the Santa Claus suit, that doesn't mean he's not going to lie to the kids about the gifts.
No, I'm...
That's what we're saying in effect.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that office is what it is. You know what I mean? Exactly. Because I'm not going to front and say that
you can't change the Santa Claus curriculum.
Exactly. I mean, you have some Santa white people Claus, who are sympathetic to our cause. You had abolitionists who, you know, to some extent was sympathetic to our cause.
Right.
But we don't care how sympathetic you are or what color you are.
Right.
Because this is what is going to happen. And this is the reason for this.
Right, so what you're saying is, regardless of who's wearing the Santa Claus suit, you still have to tell the kids you're going to bring them the gift.
Exactly. Right.
Let's go to a caller right now, see who's on the line.
Peace. What's happening, family? This is Brother Pa'atin down in Louisiana.
Wow.
Wichita, Providence, the Bayou Showman. I was listening when y'all were talking about the history of the American education, right? And also, when you were speaking about the Reconstruction of the United States, well, down here in Louisiana, where you had your first black Republicans that was right there on Raleigh Street in the Louisiana Supreme Court, that was actually dealing with the first Boule to deal with the educational system, right? But like you were saying, that it was made for the pure Europeans. Now, the thing is, when we had our own, we did our own, it was in good shape. But when you had the Boule, they actually moved to Philadelphia, it was constructed in 1903, when they were trying to stop Morgan Garvey, you know, it's a whole lot. And if the school was actually for our children, the public school, they would have been teaching us about our Moorish history and where we came from and how we were the one that actually started them with the government instead of them saying, well, our ancient forefathers, where they be speaking about the pale Europeans like George Washington and all that there. So now you have to really ask the question, if he was the president, and he didn't become president until what, 1789? Well, what was the people before that when he was dealing with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution in 1776? When all that came about, when the birth of a nation, so you tell me he had a birth of a nation without a president? And then if he was a general, who appointed him as a general? Because you have to have the commander-in-chief.
What appointed him as a general and what appointed him as president was all the guns they had. I mean, that's how it works. That's how they do it. You know, I mean, they're not following any laws. You know, laws are created to stop others from doing what they did to achieve power. You know, so with that understanding, you know, we know what happened to Black Wall Street also. It's all wrapped up in the idea that these dudes are running a gangbanger system. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like billionaire gangbangers.
You know, so hip-hop actually taught the children back then, because like KRS said, you must learn. You know, we were speaking about the history of our people in hip-hop. Now, yeah, like I said once before, hip-hop to hypnotize, our children being hypnotized now.
Okay.
Well, I think when we speak of hip-hop and what hip-hop really is, we have two different things. You know what I mean? Now, as a hip-hopper, if you will, when you speak of hip-hop, it's a different essence. I think when we're talking about hip-hop influencing children, now we're talking about the people who control hip-hop. Mm-hmm. And I don't control hip-hop.
Yeah.
But I'm hip-hop.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for the call. We appreciate you calling in. You know, continue to listen to the show. But, you know, I'm glad that he mentioned KRS-One and the You Must Learn record, you know, because that's what we're discussing, hip-hop and education. And there was a time in hip-hop where you had songs flying off of the radio and videos flying off of video broadcast stations that reflected a knowledge of yourself. You know what I mean? They were like, yo, you have to have knowledge. The highest value in this particular era of hip-hop was placed on having knowledge of self and not on making money. So we had You Must Learn, KRS-One, Boogie Down Productions. We had Fight the Power, Public Enemy, you know, and just look at the names of the groups and the individuals of that day. You had poor righteous teachers. You had brand Nubians. You had leaders of the new school.
Jungle Brothers.
You had dudes who wanted to be leaders. You had Jungle Brothers. Yeah. You know, you had Native
Tribe
Tongues.
Called Quest.
Tribe Called Quest. Right. You know, you had Queen Latifah. Mm-hmm. You know, King Son. You know, you had, but now we have Young Jeezy, mm-hmm. Lil Wayne, Phil Mob.
T-Pain.
You know, T-Pain, you know, I mean, it was just a complete paradigm shift. Not only did the rappers' names change and the content of their music change, but also the names of the neighborhoods and the places that we come from changed. New Jerusalem became Dirty Jersey. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Philadelphia.
Peace became what it do.
Right. You know what I mean?
We, God, you know, became dog.
Philadelphia went from Illadelphia to Killadelphia. Right. You know what I mean? So we have to really pay attention to how this thing happened and what caused this shift from education to indoctrination to niggerization. Mm-hmm.
But again, is it hip hop? I mean, back to the original question. Absolutely not. Is it hip hop? I don't know.
We know that it's not hip hop. You know, in the focus of this particular show is to give hip hop a voice, to say that, you know, hip hop is not Young Jeezy alone. Mm-hmm. You know, hip hop is not just Lil Wayne. You know, although Lil Wayne and Young Jeezy are hip hop consists of Wise Intelligence, mm-hmm. Talib Kweli's, you know, NY Oyus, Narubi Selas. You know, hip hop consists of
Supernova.
You know, people who espouse on ideas beyond money, hoes, and clothes.
You know, and hip hop played a big part in growing me up. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking 88, 89, 90, 91. You had like the Ice Cube. I mean, everybody, if you look at the videos back at the time, everybody had a positive message. If they not had one song on their album, they had multiple songs. You know, I remember a video, one of the earlier videos of Jay-Z, he on there with the African beads on. You know what I'm saying? In one of the videos and stuff. So, you're right. So I'm talking about the time period. So if the music was the way it was in the early 90s, you would see a different, you'll see a gravitation to knowing who you are, knowledge of self. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all the artists that you all named had a message. And so then that played in how the movies that came out at the time with Do the Right Thing and Jungle Fever and those kind of things. Right. You see a shift in the print magazine.
Exactly.
You see, everything flows together.
Right. So with this understanding that it didn't just happen in hip hop. It didn't just happen in hip hop. It happened in film.
Most certainly.
It happened on the corner.
Right.
You know, it happened. It was like a transition from marijuana on the block to crack.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it happened. Yep. So can we say that it's coincidence, being that it happened on every front?
I think it's in black culture. We can say it's planned. We can say it was purposed.
It was purposed.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So who?
I mean, I got to quote Dad Prez on this one. You know, the same people who run the educational systems are the same people who run the prison system. You know what I mean? You're not going to create a plan and components within that plan are contrary to one another. Right. It all has to go towards one mission and one vision.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
So
if crack comes and then you take over our music and then you take over our education and then you throw us in prison and you change these laws and come up with Rockefeller laws. And, I mean, okay, with all of these components, then what is your aim? Mm-hmm. And then look at the people who are being affected by the aim. So then I got to ask, who are you aiming at?
Okay. So what about those who would say that it's a lack of Kuja Jacalia in the youth, or self-determination in the youth, you know, that kind of staves off their drive to want to achieve, you know, and want to aspire to a higher place? I mean, a lot of people are arguing that the youth have a choice. You know, they're saying you don't have to pick up the gun. You don't have to pick up the crack. You don't have to. I mean.
Yeah, but they're inspired to. Where are the positive inspirations? I mean, they turn on television, you know, you got these shows where the whole show is following you and your crackhead parent around. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you got a show where, you know, you just women are being disrespectful or disrespected.
So in a sense, are we saying that the choices that they have are choices that were posed by someone else? You know what
exactly.
I mean? So in other words, it's just like voting. It's just like voting. You know, the choices that we had was
just like welfare.
It was John McCain. We could either vote for John McCain or
No, it's just like welfare. When I was coming up, you didn't have a lot of options. It was this cheese or that one.
Right.
I don't even think it was this cheese or that one. It was just that cheese.
Or this milk or that one. Or this box of cereal or that one. So you limit my choices, but then you tell me I have choice. But choice is unlimited possibilities. And you've limited my possibility.
Okay, right now, what we going to do right now, We're gonna bring in some other brothers into the studio, you know, representing Delaware. You know, these brothers right here, I mean, dynamic brothers, very necessary brothers, poets, educators, activists, you know what I mean? They've appeared on Russell Simmons Deaf Poetry, you know, found their own institution and school, and they continue to do great work in the community. You know, identical twin brothers. Twin poets, Nandi and Al.
Peace.
Welcome to the Hereafter. Glad to have you brothers here.
No question.
We kind of entered this conversation about hip hop and education, and the conversation has been going in the direction of who's controlling the circumstance in the youth not gravitating towards education and choosing other things instead of. So, this is what I'm going to do. Let me backtrack a little bit. I'm going to run off the question that kind of got us here. All right. The question that got us here was, do you think that integration hurt the education of black youth more than it has helped? Or has integration increased our chances of achieving a higher education? And is simply, as Bill Cosby stated, black people are not taking advantage of the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education ruling. And we use Barack Obama as an example. Does he represent an illustration of how integration has worked and benefited us as a people?
I would say, first and foremost, he doesn't represent, you know, the fact that it has worked. You know, that's going out simple. You know, if you look at his family structure that he was raised in, it wasn't necessary. Our culture, I mean, not our culture, but our environment. His environment was different.
Than
Malik, who I'm working with tonight. So it's a different environment. So I wouldn't say that's an example, no question.
Okay, so do you think that Barack Obama is being used in a way to say that these things have been worked? Do you think that he's being marketed and promoted in a way to present an illusion of change that's not really there? You know, sort of like, you know, Oprah Winfrey, how they, you know, Russell Simmons and things of that nature.
Anytime it's good. It's always say, well, it worked for him. You know, that
you can do it too, you know? Definitely. Mm-hmm.
You know, right. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Anytime somebody succeeds, they want to say that.
So what we're actually looking at is the exception,
exactly,
and not the rule.
Not the rule.
Okay.
Indeed. No question. And has it hurt our community integration? No question. You know, right. In our own state in Delaware, our father led, you know, the fight. It was about four people. Our father was on the front line saying, no, we ain't get ready to do this. You know, fought for community schools all the way to the end. You know,
right.
And DSEG didn't fully go into effect in Delaware till 1978. That's how hard they fought for it. So for us to realize that. And today, now they're trying to come back to community schools. So, because we realize what we lost from that aspect of having the teachers who knew the community, knew the students, knew the family members, how we lost all of that.
True. And the black teachers are what's missing. You know, we get these large schools, and the black males are just missing from the classrooms. So that whole connection piece is just being taken away from our children.
The only time
they see black men is when he's a disciplinary. He's ready to suspend them or something. There's no teacher in the classroom that looks like him, you know.
Exactly.
So
right.
our kids can't relate, you know.
But can I add to that?
That's, you know, heavy.
Yeah, and in addition to the black male missing in the classroom, the black agenda is missing in the classroom. The curriculum does not reflect the cultural experiences of our people. The curriculum, you know, of course I'm advocating African-centered curriculum, you know, and so we have to begin looking at how our schools are set up. African-centered schools are set up where it has African complementarity. You have a man and you have a woman as the leadership. Mm-hmm. We don't have just a man and a woman that's not African.
Right.
Right. He's representing like the family. Yeah,
right.
You know,
right.
Then you
very
have, you know, the
culture.
Teachers. Right. The teachers have to reflect the culture. You know what I'm saying? So they come in with the hair, the dress, you know, the language, those kind of things. We have to teach African languages in our school, all right, so that we can connect with our people on a linguistic level, you know, on a cultural level, a spiritual level. I'm going on and on.
Okay, so
you know?
So I guess what represents for you the biggest obstacle in the way of educating all children properly? What do you think is the biggest obstacle? Because it's obvious that white kids and kids of other cultures need to be re-educated also, because they have all of these misinterpretations of what black culture is. Mm-hmm. You know, they believe that black culture is a kid with a bunch of tattoos and a fat gold chain, you know, and that that the culture of black women is to shake their behinds on television, you know, and this is what kids outside of the black community are perceiving to be black culture. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the scenario where it's my little nephew, they having heritage day or culture day, you know, and all the kids are bringing in the food from their traditional backgrounds, wearing the clothing, the attire of their traditional backgrounds, you know, and the teacher told him that he should bring in hamburgers and french fries.
Right.
I mean, wear a t-shirt and jeans.
Right.
You know, so they have a cross perception of what black culture is. So what do you think is the obstacle in educating all the children properly, as opposed to, you know?
I would say that for me, the biggest obstacle is misinformation, you know, stereotypes, pejoratives, all those things that white America believes not only about black people, but about themselves, you know, white supremacy, you know, racism, you know.
Well, just to chime in with that, I think we have to focus on re-educating the educator as well. I mean, we focus so much on, well, what are the children learning, and, you know, well, what does the teacher know? Is the teacher conscious? You know, because the same curriculum, let's not be confused, the same curriculum that educates the children is the same curriculum that educated the teacher in the higher educational world.
Exactly.
So, so it's corrupt either way, either end of the spectrum.
So the same little white kids that didn't like us, you know, they didn't like us when we were in school, we didn't like them, but now they went off, they got the degrees, now they come back, now they're teaching all kids, you know, so that hate is still in them. I didn't like your dad, for real. I know your mom. Yeah, your mom did go to school with me, you know, so they didn't like, they don't really like all kids, we didn't like them, so it just continues on and on. And then the role that the media plays in education is just disrespectful to our community. I mean, and then they do it under the disguise of hip-hop, saying, oh, this is hip-hop, you know, but it's just attack on black youth.
Wow. So when you say that, what does the teacher know? You know, I built with a lot of teachers in the public school systems, you know, and they talk about this professional training things that they go to and things of that nature. And I'm like, why do they have to teach you again after you went through all these years of college to learn to do what you say you do? You have a degree that says this person has went through the rigorous training to become this particular professional. Why is it that after that happens, they're exhausting mass amounts of school budget money for this professional training? Professional development. They're teaching the teachers again. So is it like indoctrination after the indoctrination, or debriefing? A debriefing after you.
It's a way to justify spending tax money. It's a way to justify spending.
Stay in line.
Mm-hmm. Stay in line.
Make
also,
sure you're not, you know.
Don't go outside the line. Yeah, don't call outside the line. Don't allow them to do that. This works. It's been working for years and years.
So talking about the obstacles in education. You know, I hear a lot of people saying that it's poor parenting. You know, poor parenting is a problem. I hear other people saying that it's inadequate funding to a lot of inner city schools, you know, and then some people just say it's just these bad kids, you know. So
it's all three.
Right.
Yeah, combination, man. Definitely
it's all three.
Yeah, definitely a combination. Yeah,
definitely.
And then just the culture. A huge role as well, you know.
So,
because if the parents don't say education is important, then it's not going
to
be important. It's
not gonna get to,
you know,
the kids. And then the first thing being cut is the budget. You're talking about only millions of dollars people losing right now. Who going to suffer this next coming school years because they get ready to cut every project that even remotely reaches Malik right now. Anything that that's the first thing getting cut from their budgets next year. The first thing is the programs that are meaningful and has some type of substance for us. Those are going to be the first programs that are cut.
No doubt.
Mm.
But why do you think that is? There's a root cause to all three of those issues, though. There's a root cause to why we have poor parenting. There's a root cause to why the children are not, you know, interested in education. You know, there's a root cause to why we have the problems going on in the community.
I guess that's what the question was alluding to. Getting to what the root causes is. You know,
It's America. I mean, we can't. You're not going to change America. I mean, honestly, they have this system set in place. I mean, when you look at, I was watching CNN the other day, he's talking about these people who are so ingrained and they lost like millions. But when you get to up here, where they are, that by the time it trickles down here, it's so fundamentally set. You know, I was having a dialogue with a disciplinarian out of school, and he was just talking about how his hands are basically tied to making do some of the things that he know he needs to do. And it's like, well, what are you here for? So that's the role that teachers don't understand what they're there for in school, and they're contained in the box that they can't really do some of the things. That's the main reason why the community is needed to step up. We have to get the churches more involved. We need to rebuild the educational and the social environments for our children. And until we do that, then it's going to continue to just lose.
Can we just pause for a minute? You're listening to WNJC 1360 on AM Down, Surrey, Washington Township, Philadelphia, service of Foresight Broadcasting.
Just back to that point, man, but just really understanding that we have to value, that our communities have to value education and support it itself. The schools aren't, we can't look to them to create these programs. It has to be community centers. My brother's school, we addressed the need. There was a need in our community. We addressed the need. We addressed that need and created our program.
So when we create the program, you know, which is very necessary.
Surely.
When we create the programs, when we build the institutions, mm-hmm. the Garvey schools, when we build these institutions, how do we change the consciousness of the people who are under the impression that the current institution that they are a part of has their best interest at heart? You know, how do we get them to see that this institution should be patronized? You need to go to this institution and patronize this institution because it has your best interest at heart. Whereas the other institution or the public school system, being that we're talking about education, you know, looking at the numbers, you know, the dropout rates, the lead in the water in these public schools, the asbestos, you know, and all of these things that's going on in the schools. I mean, in Trenton, we haven't had a high school built since, 1935?
Yeah, something
like 1932. Right. You know, it hasn't been a high school built. The high school is dilapidated.
Oh, they got Daylight Twilight.
And see, but and then...
39 million.
But I think the product will speak for itself.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
See, and it's the point. But the point that I'm getting at, what I'm getting at is, you know, how do we convince the majority population of black people, especially when 98% of all black kids attend public schools? How do we convince these parents that they need to be a part of these programs, that they need to take advantage of these programs that you brothers are building?
Shop the results, shop the product.
You know, also, I think that, you know, I look at it the opposite. I think that we have to look at starting groundbreaking work with the minority, you know, with the 2% that already know. Because the 2% will begin to affect, you know, the 5% will begin to affect the 85% and the 15%. I said on a rhyme back in the day when I was on mixtape with Wise. I said, you know,
be careful.
Give me
I
wisdom.
Remember you from back then. Be
I know
careful.
Your rhyme, so stop. Oh! But you know, give me wisdom. Remove the E. Turn the 85 to Wise. So you take, you know, you got people who are conscious, you know, and you start working, you start, it's like a masterpiece, start chiseling away, you know, because we trying to affect change on a large, you know, on a large notion so quickly, but things don't turn that quick. Our school's six years old. My son is six. He's a baby. So the institution's a baby. And if you look at my son in relation to an elder, we got 60, 70, 80, 90 years to go before this ideology of Afrocentricity, African-centeredness, will begin to mature, you know, and then it has to go through its stages, you know. So again, we have to look at, in terms of educating the mass of the children, we have to present something to them that is going to speak to the five ways in which our people learn versus the one way that the Europeans teach. Mm-hmm. They teach through writing and reading. We teach through what? Oral, kinesthetic, rhythm.
So
okay,
is it like
fine
a left
arts.
Brain, right brain.
Left brain, right brain. And you know that the public schools is all left brain. Mm-hmm. Read and write.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But our children are oral. They like to sing. They like to beat on the table. Mm-hmm. They're simultaneous talkers. So when you're talking in class, they're talking in class, but they're learning. Mm-hmm. Europeans don't understand our children. Mm-hmm. So that the curriculum in the school, it will never be able to teach our children, because when little Kamal says, look, I'm listening to you, but guess what? I'm over here banging on the table, they're saying you're being disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to shift the whole paradigm.
we have to shift.
I mean, it was done by design, but that's the way they want it. You know, it wasn't designed for our children. And that's why we got the same thing. I mean, those teachers have been doing that way. I mean, some of these teachers in the public school, I mean, retired from schools and then come back and teach again. So they've been doing this stuff since the 60s and 70s, and it didn't work then. Right. So how can it be effective to reach these children today? There's no way it can.
Well, to quote a good friend of mine, he says, you know, you have African feet and European shoes, and you wonder why your feet hurt.
I should.
Yeah. But I mean, given the manpower, wealth, and resources to offer your own specified curriculum to the 98% of black youth who attend public schools, what would that curriculum look like? What would it look like? I mean,
it couldn't look like anything that is going to lead our people into a position of power, because the people who are funding it will cut the funding. Surely. Now, I know that's not answering your question, but if we really said, okay, you are supposed to be the wealth producers and the wealth operators of the world, white teachers will fly out the building. But now they play these games with certification, so you're not going to have black teachers being able to teach them because, they're not certified and stuff. So the real curriculum that we need to create is going to be creating our children in what? Think for themselves, be creative, to be African.
Right. So I guess let me clarify the question.
Oh, okay.
Let me clarify the question. Given the manpower, wealth, and resources, you, Brother Baye Kimmett,
uh-huh,
with the manpower, wealth, and resources,
yes,
to create a curriculum for the 98% of black youth who attend public schools,
mm-hmm,
you know, we're saying that they're going to go to your institution.
Mm-hmm.
What type of curriculum could we?
I would employ the Booker T model. I will begin to teach our children that it is our hands and our own natural resources that's going to get us out of conditions that we are. We have to look at other people in this world, like the Guatemalans who's coming here, like the Chinese people. In every major city, there's a Chinatown. We have to look at people who are the Asians who are coming here, who are doing back-breaking work, but not making a lot of noise about it. They're not flossing. They're sacrificing. So I would create a curriculum. I said, we got to get carpenters, plumbers, electricians. Okay, but we also got to have scholars. We also got to have lawyers and doctors, mm-hmm, and what have you. You have to have the balance of our social equity, all right? The things that are going to help us build a nation. I would create a curriculum that is going to speak to the experiences of our children. You know what I'm saying? Their cultural experiences, their spiritual experiences. So when our children come in, you have children, like I said, you got some children that can listen to you and walk down the hallway. You got some children that can sit and you can write on the board and they can learn. So the curriculum is going to have to address all of the different dynamics of the black child.
It's a dynamic curriculum as opposed to a static curriculum.
Exactly. It has to address all of the cultural issues of our children. Like the model you were talking about, the journalism, where our children can now be operators. Because right now what we're doing is we're creating curriculums that are only going to put our children on a conveyor belt and send them on to work for somebody else's corporation. Yeah. But we have to make them, like you said, that they're going to run the whole school. They're going to learn how to be entrepreneurs, you know, for their own businesses in 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade.
So can something like that begin with us getting together and tapping all the plumbers, all the carpenters in a small place like Trenton, 7.5 square miles, and getting them, helping them create programs for youth to become understudies under what they're doing as a program,
and
that way we can raise the generations of youth in the particular trades and guilds that we need them to be in, so we can develop the builders of tomorrow.
It can happen.
Should be happening all over the nation.
It should be happening
in every black community. It should be happening. But we as a black people, we don't love ourselves enough to go out and say, okay, well, I'm a doctor now, and I know it's a whole bunch of kids that want to be doctors, or I'm a veterinarian. Let me go back and I remember when I was a child, I just like working with animals. Let me go to the park and see who's interested in this. It doesn't happen anymore. Nobody wants to get back. You want to take this degree and go to corporate America.
No doubt.
Work at the bank and make $8,000. Yeah, I'm good now.
So
right. I live over here now. I'm good.
Sacrifice.
So do you think that if let's say the people in this room, if we put together, let's say a group of conscious organizations, you know, a coalition of conscious community organizations. Shout out to Coco. But could we take that organization and let that organization graft into existence the program that could tap these carpenters to come into this program, you know, and we set up the programs, we set up the curriculum for the programming and just get them to contribute there. And I don't think that a carpenter is thinking through his day how he could teach a kid how to do what he do, mm-hmm. because nobody's never really brought that to his attention. Mm-hmm. I think that if we can put together a coalition of brothers and sisters who can take it upon themselves to build these type of programs and then tap the talent to come in and teach the kids, could we?
But just to play the devil's advocate here, just to, you know, go around the corner for
I was
going to
say yes first, but go ahead.
You know, the kids that I teach, you know, they want to be rappers.
No doubt.
All right? They want to make $1 million. They want to drive big cars. They want to wear jewelry. They want to have 3 or 4 girlfriends. It's very light skin. Mm-hmm. But how do we even get them interested? I mean, these are great ideas, but again, just to go around the corner for a minute, if I were that kid, you know, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to be a plumber's son. I want to be Gangsta Junior, son.
Good point.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to go to the NBA, son. I'm trying to make like 7 figures.
Good point.
Figures. Good Why point. All they S's got SH on it, though? Shunday. Shun. Right.
Like, right. No, that's a good point.
You know?
That's a good point.
Yeah. How do we get their interest level increased to the level where we no longer have to push them? They come to us.
My man Marshall said a long time ago when we were starting the Garvey program that we had to, like, he was like, yo, if we don't take this conscious stuff, right? You say it all the time. If we don't take this conscious stuff and start to, like, floss it, like the dudes on the block do, we losing a lot of these kids. So what's going to happen is that we got to start doing this conscious stuff almost like they do the real, not trying to emulate them, but trying to show them that we can have a sustainable lifestyle being conscious. But we haven't done that yet. We haven't gotten to that point yet because we're still struggling and scrappling and a whole nine or what have you. But when the mass movement on a conscious level begins to, you know, make its way like it did in the early 90s in hip hop.
Right.
Everybody was only, you couldn't even get on if you weren't saying something positive or had at least one song on your album. If we begin to turn the tides again back to that, then the children will start rapping about whatever.
So you're saying if I get a Dr. Dre beat, mm-hmm. right, I get some chicks in my video, right, but my message is different. Mm-hmm. They'll listen.
If you can get a Dr. Dre beat, all it takes one person right now. If Kanye West right now, let's say Kanye for example, right now decided to just do a conscious song, or even Jay-Z, he can turn it. Jay-Z probably even more could turn the tide right now if he really wanted to. But it probably won't sell. He had to deal with the fact that it might drop off on, you know, the charts. But we control hip hop, really. I know the corporate people do and the whole nine. And that's a dialogue. We could talk about that. But we have the potential to control it. How about that? We have the potential to control hip hop by what we say. You know what? No. I'm going to put this song out regardless. I'm going to put this video out regardless. But it takes the small steps, though. It might start with a video. I say, I'm going to take out, instead of 5 girls, I'm going to have 3. My next one, I have 1. The next one, she's going to be fully clothed. You know what I'm saying? It has to be small steps to the 98%. Right. You have to start with the 2% to get to the 98. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if that makes any sense. But,
but I feel you, though. But do you think that's enough to change Raheem's mind in that classroom or wherever he is, on the block, if you will, to say, you know what, I want to listen to this? Because cats, they're not going to get their prayers. They're not going to get
some of Raheem's, though. The Chinese, when they had the Chinese Revolution, they was putting bullets in a lot of Raheem's heads. I mean, sorry. I'm not suggesting we start killing our own children.
Right.
But the Uncle Tom's, they was killing.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I'm not suggesting we kill our children. I'm just saying we're going to lose that, some of them.
See what you...
We lose them every day.
The problem... A lot of the problem with what we're dealing with Raheem, you know, why are we using the name Raheem? Who said the brother name?
Shout out to Raheem.
I like Raheem.
No, we're going to change the brother's name.
Let's go with Johnny.
The brother's name.
I don't like
Johnny. How about Kamau?
The brother's name.
Kamau sounds sexy.
The brother's name is Stevie Bonneville Wallace.
All right.
Now, Stevie Bonneville Wallace is disrupting the class. All right. Stevie Bonneville Wallace has a theory of his own that the highest value in life should be placed on money. He don't see how to equate his education with success. That's the problem. That's the crux of the problem. He don't equate education to success. We're embedded in a society that places the highest value in life on money.
No doubt.
Therefore, Stevie Bonneville Wallace realizes instantly that I have too many shortcuts to making money. I don't need to be sitting in here for 12 years for 8 hours a day to make money. I know where I can make money. So if this whole thing is about making money, if the teacher keep telling me, go to school so you can get a good job, so you can make some money.
Exactly.
And I'm so like, why would he show I'm going to cut that out. I'm going to skip that. And I'm going to go to the corner. To get to how we convince Stevie Bonneville Wallace that the highest value shouldn't be placed on money is to show him how education not only brings you money, but it gives you the ability to sustain your people, culture, and preserve your entire community as opposed to one individual. I think that's a lot of, I just believe that the entire system is going to have to be uprooted and redone for our kids to excel at the level we would like to see them excel at, the level that they need to excel at. The system is going to have to be uprooted, the public school system. You know, when we get right down to the root of it, you know, the individuals that laid the foundation for public schooling were what they call Hegelians. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Horace Mann, John Dewey. You know, these dudes were all students of George Frederick Wilhelm Hegel.
Yep.
This Caucasian of the Enlightenment, what he did was, he's the same guy that separated Egypt from Africa to rob Africans of the credit for building that civilization.
Right.
He's the same guy that made Egypt a part of the Middle East, a fictitional location.
No doubt.
You know, when you ask kids today in college, where is Egypt? They say the Middle East.
No doubt.
Then you ask them how many continents it is, and the Middle East is not mentioned.
Right.
You know what I mean? So this is his influence still permeating with us to this day.
Right.
You know, and not only did he separate Egypt, but he created North Africa and sub-Saharan Africa.
No doubt.
You know, and he separated the people. He said, no, none of these civilizations were built by Africans. They were built by people who lived in North Africa or people who lived in the Middle East, you know, things of that nature. But these, the students of this guy laid the foundation for public schooling. So inherently in the public school system is the idea that we are inferior to others, you know, and this is the beginning of the indoctrination of the value system being induced into our kids' heads to make them value themselves less than others of value, you know. And that brings us to another question. All right, stay with me, because this is one that been beating me up for a minute. Considering the New Year's Day execution, the execution of Oscar Grant, and the attempted execution of Robbie Tolan by police officers in Oakland, California, and Texas, what type of education do we have to give our children for them to escape that dynamic? I mean, Oscar Grant was by all means me. He was from the hood. He was a kid from the hood. You know what I mean? He had on his Timbs, he had his jeans, his hoodie, you know what I mean, his skull cap, things of that nature. He was a hood kid. But Robbie Tolan was from a nice gated community in Texas. His father was a professional baseball player. I mean, but regardless to either of the black males' station in life, they both met the same fate at the hands of domestic terrorists wearing police uniforms. You know, I mean, what do we do to counter that dynamic? Because here we have, you know, the so-called educated kid, okay, who did the right things, went to school, parents were there, the good parents, you know, the good upbringing, you know, went to school, graduated school, was playing minor league baseball himself, you know what I mean, had aspirations to go to major league baseball. And then you have Oscar Grant, the kid who came up like me, you know what I mean, projects, the hood, doing what he do, you know, but they both met the same fate, you know. And to go back to Bill Cosby, when he was on his rant about poor black kids, he said that, you know, you complaining, you going out here and want to attack the cops for shooting your son in the head. Why did he steal the pound cake? Why did he have the pound cake in his hand? Why did he steal the Coca-Cola? He shouldn't have had the Coca-Cola in his hand. We are not stealing pound cake and Coca-Cola. We are not uneducated. And white
children aren't getting shot in the back with their hands cuffed.
Exactly. We are not uneducated, you know? We are not uneducated. You can't, you know, Bill Cosby's case was that poor blacks were failing the movement, you know? But here we have a well-to-do black person, you know, suffering the same fate as the kids from the hood. So it's not about where we live. It's not about, we're not being oppressed because we're Christians, Jews, and Muslims, because we're rich, poor, or other. You know, the oppression is based on the fact that we are African. You know what I mean? We are African. So what kind of education is it going to take for us to get past that? How do we counter that dynamic with education?
It has to begin with us, you know, filling that value, first of all, as our community. I mean, to realize that this is our future. And if our response is going to be as it was with these two brothers, where there's minimal response there, you know, we're mad for a day and then we go back to normal, you know, nothing's going to change. So we have to change. We have to change our community, show our from our ground organizations, from early child care through graduation centers, community centers, churches, we all involved. This is, you know, I have a poem talking about that's my daughter. You know, you have to act like that was your son. Let's get out here and get involved in our community. Show this society that we value our children. And until we do that, rather it's a son in California, in Kentucky, in right. Texas, it's going to be the same. It's our response.
Do you think of our lack of participation as a community and people, do you think that has a lot to do with the fact that we have been on the front line fighting for so many years? And I think we're jaded with revolution. I mean, at this point, I mean, we've done all the protests. Like, for instance, in the state of New Jersey, you know, they talk about the parents don't participate. It's the parents. If it weren't for the parents, the poor parents in the state of New Jersey, Abbott districts would have never been set up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the poor districts, the poor parents got together, they rallied, you know, some attorneys came to their aid, and they pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and fought to get the Abbott law set up. So we do participate. I mean, Oscar Grant was executed. The community came out in full support, like, yo, what do we have to do to make you stop killing us? You know, so is it a matter of us saying, okay, we're going to value ourselves and community a little more? Or is it a matter of us challenging the overall value system or perception of black people in this country? You know, like, for instance, Oscar Grant, he was executed. His life was taken like he was worthless. I mean, this was worse. This is treatment that you wouldn't give to an animal. I mean, you have the People's Movement for the Equal Treatment of Animals in America. I mean, these white people get together and they mobilize on the issue of saving dogs before they would get together and rally to save black children. You know, now.
But Sean Bell was shot, right? And those were black cops.
Right. See, but that's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying about the dynamic, the value. The value system is embedded in all of us. You know what I mean? But the overall value system that's being induced into the heads of the masses of people in this country, it goes way back. You know, and
it goes back to what you were talking about in terms of integration too. You know, there's a book called Post Traumatic Slave Syndrome. I'm pretty sure y'all have heard of Dr. Joy Leary. She's always on Michael Bays and what have you. Shout out to my wife, she's reading the book now. And she's, you know, chiming me in every night.
Makita.
Yes, you know what I'm saying? But Dr. Joy Leary talks about that all of us are under the effects of post-traumatic slave syndrome. All of us are still trying to attain the mentality and the ideology of white America, even those black cops. Those black cops think they're white. They want to be white. They want to attain the power that white people have. So
you're saying it's the system, and that no matter who joins the system, you follow that system's agenda? I think that's what you're saying.
I think it's an attitude. I think it's an attitude that has been instilled in the people of this country since its inception. Black people have always been considered worthless.
Right.
the value that has been placed on our being, our culture, the things that we create has always been less than the value placed on theirs. You know, and to get back to the Oscar Grant issue, what do we have to do to make them understand that we value our lives the way that they value theirs? And this is what I... One well-aimed shot fired at the right person is far more effective than a billion peaceful demonstrations. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes you have to say, look, you have to say, look, I mean, if Oscar Grant's daughter is going to be fatherless, somebody else's daughter is going to be fatherless also. Because we value our lives the same way you value yours.
No doubt.
You know, at what point, you know, is this what they're pushing the people to?
And the murder rate will go down. Because they will definitely. Once Sarah got killed, you know, it's going to be different than when our children die. You know, we start saying, okay, we lose a child, they're going to lose a child. That's going to be different. Then,
well, not even saying that.
Not even saying we're going to go kill somebody.
They're going to lose it. But it was 1993, I remember, because we was in Pittsburgh, and something happened with some brothers from one of the so-called gangs. But when a cop pulled them over, and they tried to pull off on the cop, and the cop shot through the back of the window, killed two of the brothers or something. And the brothers was mad. A cop car came through that neighborhood. We was there that same weekend, and they basically set the car. I mean, the cop got ambushed where they said, you know, we not having it. And they shot.
Right.
And you just seen Pittsburgh. It was like, and we was outside of Pittsburgh and Clarendon. But I mean, everybody, it was like, you know, height of emergency right now. Oh, no. But our attitudes was different. Right. That no.
These right.
Children.
Right.
You killed, you took one of our balls. We're going to
take one. Do you think that the shift in the attitude that we have from Rodney King to today has a lot to do with the fact that the number one song on radio is Like a Lollipop and not You Must Learn? Or it's
no
it,
doubt. It's what they say to our children.
We know Flavor Flav, but we don't know Chuck D.
No doubt.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the key.
Right.
I said,
that's powerful.
I said yesterday, they say to our little girls, oh, look, Lil Wayne and I'm making it rain on them. Look how much money they making in the strip clubs in Atlanta. But at the same time, they showing their daughter images of Hannah Montana singing the Star Spangled Banner. It's like, look here, little black girls. You look over here, and this is for us. You know, you don't like Hannah Montana, but look over here. Look at Lil Wayne and them. Look. You know, and it's like, until we say something, you know, we got to be able to tell our children, no. That ain't us right
now. You know, I was actually, we talked about this at the Kwanzaa celebration a couple weeks ago real quick, that making it rain is actually an African culture.
Oh, yeah.
That you would take money and throw it at the dancers. You take money and throw it at the drummers and put it on their heads, you know?
Yes, sir.
But I'm going to ask a question. Why don't Philadelphia cops shoot little Chinese kids in Chinatown? Because the people are mobilized. They have one conscious cause. They understand that they have a defense system that if you come shoot a Chinese person, all of China going to bug out.
America owes China some $700 billion, so that's helping too.
Exactly.
Well, we got to support too. But speaking of support, the hereafter, what we do here on this radio station, we take this thing live too. On Friday, January 23rd at Liquid Charm, 1207 Ray Street in Philadelphia, is going down again. Wise and intelligent. If you enjoy the brothers that were on this show this evening, they will be there as features. Deaf Poetry, Twin Poets, Miss Wise, and Philly's own Magnum O. So again, that's going down Friday, January 23rd. The hereafter, Liquid Charm. Is it safe to say 8:00? 9:00. Doors open at 9:00. Admission is $10. Bring a friend. Tell a friend.
Come through. 1207 Ray Street. Liquid Charm. All right.
J Boogie, a.k.a. Earth Star, will be on the wheels. 1 and 2s.
So with that said, we're going to shut the show down right now. We're going to sign out, you know. And, you know, but I want to thank the brothers that came out for coming out.
Yes.
Brother Baye Kimmett, founder of the Garvey School, twin poets, artist extraordinaire, activist, and real briefly, just plug what you got going on, what you're doing in your life, you know what I mean, your websites, whatever.
All right, thegarveyschool.org. The website's under construction, but you still can go and find out, you know, who we are. The Garvey School, Egun Omode Shule. We're located at 26 South Warren, Trenton, New Jersey, second floor. See the red, black, and green flag on the door? That's us. We in the building.
Red, ahead, black, bro. And green.
And just to add, is the atmosphere there is crazy. I'm sorry.
Wonderful. We got 1 minute, sister. 1 minute.
It is.
Peace. Twin Poets, Brother Al on the www.twinpoets.com. The website for the school, projectstayfree.com. The community center is Kingswood Community Center, and it's kwgcc.org. And like everybody,
daycare center to senior center, it's all in there. We got you covered.
Definitely.
That's what it is. Intelligentmusic.com. That's yes, music with a Z and a K. Wildseedfilms.com. MySpace.com/WiseIntelligence. Silver Alert World Radio. Sabir Bay, you know, and we doing it.
I want to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody in the studio, man. I was out in the hallway listening, man. I was like, I was feeling it, man. I want to thank Brother Wise, man. And don't forget everybody to come out January the 23rd, man, at the Liquid Charm, man. It's going to be off the hook. I heard the brothers, and they're hot. They hot, all right? So I want to thank everybody. Till next week, we're going to start at 2 o'clock with the sister that wrote The Matrix, Sunny Patterson. Sophia Stewart, actually. I don't know why I say Sunny Patterson. Hey, it's Sunny on my mind out there. No, Sunny's going to be a she actually having expecting right
Sophia
now.
Didn't she write Terminator 2?
She wrote the first one and The Matrix.
Okay.
We got to wrap up. I want to say thank everybody. Peace.
For the past 60 minutes, you have been listening to Civil Alert with Brother Sabir Bay here on WNJC. Tune in each and every Saturday evening. Well, starting next week, he'll be on from 2 to 4 with Civil Alert with Brother Sabir Bay here on WNJC.